Greatness is associated with the world stage. We're blinkered to say that the Irish rugby team or a province has dominated. Leinster, I think, under Joe Schmidt, that was a great team.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Come along, it is the Hurling Pod after the last weekend of the regular section of the National Hurling League. We have the semi-final lineup. It's going to be a repeat of last year's final where Limerick take on Kilkenny. That's going to be in Cork this Saturday afternoon. And then on Sunday, we've got a Munster derby between Clare and Tipperary. The Hurling Pod is brought to you, of course, by Bord Gáis Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. So I'd like to say All-Ireland winners, Paul Murphy, James Skeller here. How are you getting on, lads?
How's it going, lads?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
How was your bank holiday weekend? We're recording a little bit earlier than normal, and people can listen this week on podcast, of course. If you're on the radio on News Talk and maybe haven't heard us before, if you listen to us on Off the Ball, we do two pods a week. This is the free pod, which everyone can access, which kind of is a 40-minute roundup of the weekend just gone by. And then we've got our members' pods where we tackle the questions that have been sent in by our subscribers every week. And you can get that this week on Monday, because we're going to release both on the same day this week. So that's all going to be there for you. So if you enjoy what you're listening to, or if you're watching us on the Off the Ball YouTube, then maybe you'll consider coming back and giving us some repeat business. But how was your bank holiday, lads? Skell, starting with you, how was it?
I'd like to say it was a quiet weekend, but it wasn't. Of course, I might have overindulged a bit, William. Mm. But alas, here I am. I made it anyway.
Well, you made it to the recording, which is the main thing, and you were out with the Galway 20s as well. We're in full championship preparation mode at the moment.
Yeah, we're heading out. So obviously we're playing Offaly on April 6th. They play Dublin first in their first round game, but we're playing in Tullamore in the 6th of April, just under three weeks. So like, you're kind of ramping up preparations now and trying to get that bit of match sharpness, which is tricky now with conditions because the weather has been relentless nationally. So any game we play, it's in wind and rain, as you can imagine. And it's just about getting them sharp and trying to keep lads injury free and kind of limit disruptions. I suppose the St. Raphael's guys obviously played St. Kieran's at the weekend, so they're back now. So it's probably the first time this morning we had everybody, which is tricky at underage level. You know, with minors and 20s, you get, there's, I won't, disruption is the wrong word to use, but you know, it's hard to grasp your full squad with, like I said, the seniors taking some 20s and then schools, etc., and colleges. So you imagine we're 4 months into our season and today is the first day we've had everyone.
Yeah. Well, awfully to win at the weekend as well against Limerick. So it's all coming together nicely ahead of that game. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Tullamore in a couple of Saturdays' time for that game. It should be should be pretty good. I'm going to guess you had a much more wholesome weekend, Murph, than Scale going on the beer for 3 days.
Yeah, I didn't go on the beer for 3 days. Yeah, quite a weekend. Look, I suppose took it handy. Went for a bit of a stroll yesterday, dinner last night. I suppose we first saw that Skell probably did have a heavy weekend. I think there was one or two Instagram stories going around. Is it right? This man's going for pints. The podcast might be a little bit late here this morning. But fair play to you, Skell. You tug out regularly, though. You never miss a podcast despite having a few pints the night before.
Cheers. No. I have to show up no matter what happens. You have to show up.
Tenerife is the only thing that costs us an appearance from this year, so we have them for the rest of the season. And yep, no, admirably, we did change the recording time about, I think, three or four different times for this weekend. But here we are now on Monday lunchtime putting this together. It'll be available, of course, on Monday on the YouTube as well, if you prefer to watch us than listening to us. The final weekend, look, I guess it played out as we had expected with the top four positions. Probably the game that was pivotal to what was going to happen in 1B was the draw between Galway and Limerick. So Shane O'Brien sent off, which left Limerick with a bit to do in the second half against Galway. But it was the treble champions from last year who led going into the final stages of that game. Took 2 points from Evan Nylan to rescue a draw for Galway and Salt Hill. Ultimately, the draw wouldn't be enough because Tipperary did their own business away from home against Antrim. Jason Ford, 12 points. Jake Morris scoring 2-2 as they beat Antrim by 2-21 to 12 points. So that meant that Limerick topped the group in 1B with Tipperary in second place. Dublin rounding off their campaign against Westmeath, 222 to 15 points. Keno Sullivan with a goal in the second half, 1-4 for him and all. Fergal Whiteley had scored the first goal earlier. David Williams of Westmeath finishes the top scorer in 1B of the league after he hit 7 points for Westmeath. The Lake County's chances not helped by Aaron Craig being sent off. They were 11-6 down at half time, and then Dublin made the most of an extra man in the second half. In 1A, well, Cork opened up. Alan Connolly with back-to-back hat-tricks now for Cork. They scored 5 goals goals against Offaly last week, 3 against Wexford at the weekend. Cork winning by 321 to 115. 12 different scorers for the Rebels across that game as well, while Wexford had to rely entirely really on Seamus Casey, who got a goal and 9 points. Waterford, just the 4 points in the second half. Very difficult conditions at Welsh Park. TJ Reid back, 8 points for him. Mikey Butler injured. That's the first klaxon of Mikey Butler mentions for this pod. But Kilkenny winning by 18 points to 2 goals and 9. And it was two late frees from David Reedy that won the game in Birr for Clare, who topped the group. Clare winning by 23 points to 119 against Offaly. Owen Cahill got 10 points for the faithful in that one. So Clare finished first, Kilkenny finished second. So that means the pairings for the semi-finals this weekend, you've got Kilkenny versus Limerick and Clare against Tipperary. So Murph, probably no great surprises there really, with the way the semi-final lineup came in the end. But I suppose Clare only fielding 3 of the players from the All-Ireland semi-final last year, you'd understand that Brian Lowen was trying to give lads a run out, and he'll probably be happy enough that they actually got over the line and got the win on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Offaly have put it up to teams during this league as well. So, I mean, when you consider they went down to Wexford, really put it up to Wexford, had a good start against Kilkenny as well, and just, I suppose, faded away in the last 15 or 20 minutes. So for Brian Lowen to put out, you know, a weaker team or a team without more established players and to still come out with a win, he'll be happy enough. And he acknowledged that, you know, as well after the game, that, you know, Offaly will be happy enough to get a game like that as well. And he was able to get a run out to a lot of his other players as well. So, look, I think considering they're top of the table, they're undefeated at the moment, and regardless how you've done that, you'll be happy enough. So it's a good way to finish off as well, and a good rattle for the extended panel, really, for Brian Lowen.
Yeah, so 3 players from the semi-final last year against Kilkenny were Eva Quilligan, Sena Mori and Rory Hayes. They also had some players coming in. I already mentioned David Reedy, who held his nerve with those 2 late frees to give him the win. Aaron Shanner also got some game time. Conor Cleary had come off the bench. And we've been talking throughout the league, really, Skell, about the guys that he's been having a look at. And Brian Lowen mentioned afterwards that that was 20 players that he took a look at against Offaly in the last round game. You saw the warm-up the week before for Shane O'Donnell and for Tony Kelly. So those guys are coming back into the team as well. Is there a feeling that maybe Clare have unearthed a little bit more depth now than they would have had in 2023?
I'd agree with that. I think we've been mentioning over the last couple of weeks that they have been building and now have built a good squad. Like when I say a squad, I'm not talking about 17 or 18. I'm talking 20 to 22 or 3 players that you can trust to come in and make an influence. Like they've gone about their business in the league really nicely when you consider that they haven't really fielded just their strongest 15 at all, minus Shane O'Donnell and Tony Kelly, obviously. And they've used players sparingly. So they seem to be going about business really well. And I think, you know, to go forward, I think there's obviously an understanding in Clare that this is probably the best group they've had, you know, since they won their Ireland in 2013. And this is probably the best chance they're going to have, even if you go back to 22 and 23, to take down Limerick. So I think they're grafting really well. They're building nicely. And it'd be very interesting to see how they go in the Munster Championship, because they're building well. So, yeah, things look good for Clare.
Yeah, we'll see how they get on against Tipperary. Tipperary obviously having to deal with a few injuries, including the news, Murph, for them, unfortunately, that Seamus Kennedy, as we kind of suspected after he went down at Porkycueve the week before, it was confirmed on Friday that he suffered ligament damage, so he's out for at least 6 months. I don't know if Owen Connolly is going to be ready for the start of the league either. He went off with an elbow injury in Corrigan Park at the weekend just gone by. But Seamus Kennedy's going to be a big loss, isn't he? Liam Cahill said afterwards he was one of those guys that puts out fires for the team. He's got a bit of versatility in his defending as well. He's a big loss for Championship.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's had a few great years, just playing really strong hurling, really in good form, and like you said, the versatility really is a huge thing with him. You know, he's a man well able to play anywhere 5 to 12, you know. Great physical presence as well. You know, if you're looking for to inject that bit of physicality matched with a bit of skill, and you know, the ability to attack going forward but also defend, I mean, that versatility is so important to every team. And really, I suppose we've seen him over the last few years, you know, grow into this Tipperary team and just become such an established player. So, like, for such an innocuous injury as well, you know, he was kind of standing on his own at the time when it happened. It's just one of those ones, so unfortunate. Not that there's any, I suppose, any good luck to any cruciate injury, but, you know, it was just such a tough one for him to take. So, you know, that's a big dent now for Tipperary going forward. Look, I'm certain there's lots of players that will want to try and step in and fill that gap. But, you know, he's been a great player for Tipperary over the last few years. So, look, disappointing that his year is essentially finished now at this stage.
Yeah, on the members pod, we'll dig into big detail on the semi-finals this weekend. But the venues and times for them this weekend, both games are going to be on TG Carr. 4:30 on Saturday is the repeat of the final. And it feels like a literal repeat because they're going back to Páirc Uíomh to play again. Limerick against Kilkenny. And then Sunday at 4:00, you've got Clare against Tipperary, which is going to be in a Moor Park in Portlaoise, which looked very, very heavy conditions at the weekend when they played against Kerry. And there's a lot of games taking place around there. They've also got the Division 2 semi-final between Laois and Down for this weekend in Moor Park, but at time of recording, not decided yet whether it's going to be Saturday or Sunday. Having spoken to both camps, they look like it's going to be on Saturday as opposed to a doubleheader on Sunday because the risk of the pitch cutting up if they had two games there. But Skell, I don't know how you feel about this. Limerick are going to end up playing more in Páirc Uíomh than the Gaelic grounds this year because they had to give away games at home.
Yeah, it's a bit strange, I suppose, but it's just the way the cookies crumbled. I know they're redeveloping their own grounds. But like, what a great facility to go to. Like, and I think the record, truthfully speaking, is so good in Páirc Uíomh that it's nearly treated like a home venue at this stage. I don't know if they've been beaten in Páirc Uíomh. You know, like,
They lost one game. Do you remember the first round of the league? The night the Keane Lynch was coming back against Cork.
Okay, so I stand corrected. They have been beaten once. Yeah. So
but that's it. I think they've won all the rest of them.
Yeah, but look, Limerick are very impressive wherever they go. I think they're one of those teams as well as like that wherever they play, I don't think it really knocks a bit out of them. They're able to play to their ability in every stadium, in every ground they go to. So I just think it's business as usual. And like it's two good draws, I think, to be honest, for the four teams. They probably have been the four, you could say, form teams of the league, and they deserve to where they be. So hopefully two good games. And we might get a bit of actual exposure of the game this weekend.
Yeah, go on. Take the floor on that one. So obviously we only got to see one game on TV at the weekend, which was Galway against Limerick. I think there was an online offering for the Antrim versus Tipperary game, but just the one game on the standard TV at the weekend, which was the last round of the Hurling League.
Yeah, and part of me, like, I'm trying to remain civil in this conversation because part of me understands like that there may not have been the most attractive fixtures because of what was on the line. You could say the league was nearly formatted already, the pairings were already done, and the only one that was carrying a bit of weight, you could say, was Galway versus Limerick, which, yes, was shown. But I just look at, I'm a hurling snob, Will. I'm a hurling snob. I want hurling to be on TV all the time. You know, I just think it doesn't get enough exposure. And the league as a whole hasn't been hectic. I think we all admit that, but that's still no reason not to be showing games. And it's tricky. I understand that, you know, RTE, GA, they have tricky propositions here with the weekend of sport that was in it, over the actual weekend that was in it itself. So, but I don't know, if we're looking at growing the game and keeping it in the crosshairs of the public, like it needs to be on television far more, or even offer an online service somehow, give people the option.
Yeah, I do wonder, Murph, if this is not really what GAA Go should be for, rather than the games where they're going to pull in subscribers for the championship, where if someone has got their season pass, is there not the possibility that you put Waterford Kilkenny onto there or put Tipperary against Antrim on there? I know that Division 1A was already decided and we had a fair idea who was going to finish up in the semi-final spots, but something like GAA Go, that's where it can come into its own, is on a weekend like just come by.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And I don't think people are asking for a huge amount in terms of the quality of the production element of what they're getting. It's really just to have a camera on the match so they can see the match, particularly when all the games are at a condensed time like they were over the weekend. Like, you know, different times of the league, we've had Saturday, Sunday fixtures and they've been well spread out and people can go to a game or they can watch a game. But particularly when all the games are so close together this weekend, you know, just to have a camera at the game, to have something where that if a person wants to go and watch the game or even watch it back, that is there. No, and there was cameras at the games. I mean, obviously, you know, in order to have the Sunday game, there has to be coverage of it at the game. So, you know, maybe why that coverage isn't available to, you know, like that GA Go subscribers, whatever it is, but just that people at least have the option. Okay, they don't have to go and get it if there's a fee, but nevertheless, at the weekend, I thought I was doing something wrong. I was looking around saying, where are these games? But like, I mean, there's other weekends there where they were just dead rubber games. You can understand that there were going to be one-sided games. But we had Cork and Wexford at the weekend. Okay, it turned out to be a one-sided game. But that wasn't to be known before the game because both teams, it looked like, was going to be fairly balanced. It just didn't happen to be that way. So, you know, there was games like Kilkenny Waterford again. Conditions drew that into a bad game, but on paper that should have been a decent enough game. So I think, you know, if you're forecasting before this, there was good reason to have good games on this weekend in some format and somewhere that people could watch them.
Just an alternate point of view. I know we have said the league has been met a couple of times. I'm pretty sure that was the title of the members pod last week. I got a DM during the week, which was just a little bit too late for us when we were recording the pod last week. But it comes in from a Limerick supporter who's now based in Cork, but wanted to stay anonymous. Says, look, something that's an absolute bake at the moment is the amount of whinging that people are doing about the league. It's happening year after year about the hurling league like clockwork. Social media today after the game between Kilkenny and Clare was riddled with nonsensical moans about the supposed stats of the game, and the Clare game against Kilkenny was actually brilliant. The game is gone, it's ruined, people were saying overcoached, throwing the ball too much, Jim, the slitter is too light, too many scores, the refs, blah 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 blah. Some of these complaints are legitimate, like simulation at the moment, but some of the stuff from people who should know better is nonsense. It's been happening every year. People seem to have amnesia about how good the championship has been and are oblivious to the fact that three or four teams look like they've really improved again this year. The championship is shaping up to be savage this year, and maybe the lads can remind people to just relax. What do you think, Skell?
I think we have the same conversation every year. I think we were talking last week and we were talking specifically about the referees. The referees come into focus during the league as well, where conditions are tough, pitches are tricky, weather is poor, teams are working hard on the training field, obviously, so they're not putting out, you know, probably the best game, best foot forward. And it's hard for referees. But we were saying it only happens in the league. Come the championship, it's like, We forget about it. We focus on the game. I think it's very, like, I understand. Look, we probably take a championship mindset and look at the league. We want the league to match what the championship produces. You know, that's never going to happen. I think every team is the same. They're prepping, obviously prepping for the championship, so they're not going as hard as they can in the league, obviously. So, but us as kind of spectators and punters, etc., we're looking at it going, well, I saw Clare play last year in the Gaelic grounds. You know what I mean? That's the way I want them to play every day. Or the same with Galway, etc. But it's not going to happen in the league. I think all the teams didn't go through a certain amount of loading, you could say, in terms of training. Like, every team is training heavy, trying to build in the miles, so the condition to go through, which is a war of attrition of a championship. Like, the round robin is difficult, it's tough. It's like the Six Nations. Like, there's games coming quick and fast, and you don't have an awful lot of time to prepare. So you take your window, let's say, from January up to April, you work as hard as you can, build in the condition there, and then get ready for championship. And that all feeds into probably the games in the league not probably being the best product. So, but it's like that. We had the same conversation last year and the year previous, and no doubt we'll be here next year talking about the hurling's not hectic, but it's natural progression, lads. January through April is limited enough, and then the floodgates open after that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I said last week, Murph, and I stand over it. I didn't think that there was much of a bite, really, to Limerick against Tipperary, which is a game we were kind of all looking forward to after the break, and it just never really ignited. But then you look at some of the games last weekend, like the really heavy pitch at Walsh Park, the windy conditions there were, I think, between Offaly and Clare, where it was genuinely a gale wind in either half. Like, that is just the nature of playing games in March, where you're going to get a lot of rain during the week, you're going to have testing conditions. In all likelihood, by the time the round robin of the championship comes round, we'll hope anyway, conditions are going to be a lot better, and maybe some of that more attractive, quicker hurling is going to be possible in the better conditions.
Well, it will, absolutely. I think the example of the game over the weekend between Limerick and Galway, realistically, I think there was a few options early on for Limerick, or there was a few moments early on for Limerick where, if the conditions weren't as bad, a few the sequences of play would have came off, and they may have got a goal, they may have got a point, but the heavy ball, the heavy ground, the ability, like, I mean, there was one example I saw, I think it was in the first 10 or 15 minutes, someone tried to let Aaron Gillan through. They popped a hand pass out to him. It might have been Adam English or Seamus Flanagan tried to pop a hand pass to him. It was just behind him. But, like, literally, you know, Aaron Gillan wasn't going to be able to get back for that ball because the ground was so heavy he couldn't turn. In summer, he pivots and he gets that ball and he's gone again. So there's so much of the game will change once the ground hardens up. And there was often, you know, there was parts over the weekend where you saw players sprinting for a ball in championship, in any ground in the country, you know, once the ground hardens up, that ball is into the hand and they're gone into a sprint and they're in the attack and it's exciting. But how many times over the weekend did we see players running for the ball and they didn't rise, as in the ball was stuck on the ground and it just got, you know, and so many of the games descended into just referees having to hop the ball and different things. And it just completely changes the dynamic of the game. So inevitably, look, once this league is over and over the next month, the pitches will change across the country. The ground will get harder. The weather will just get that bit better. And players will start zapping ball around. And naturally, the evolution of it then is it's exciting hurling. And suddenly we're back into it and we forget all about the league. But look, I agree with what was said there. Parts of it I agree with. But where he was just saying in the comment about, you know, we're constantly talking about it. It's probably important to stay, you know, talking about it and keep it current. Like, if people don't speak about the quality of the league, Well, then it'll just be accepted, and maybe nothing will ever happen whereby we don't eventually end up with an end product that's really exciting. Because, like, if I think back to my time playing league matches or leagues or league finals, like, I remember back in 2014, we played league final with Tipperary and Thurles, and it was a brilliant game. You know, even to look back at it in terms of, yes, there were mistakes and things, but the excitement was there. We're probably heading in a direction now where we might not get a league final like those league finals again, because it's like it's so close to championship. Like, I know one of the comments, and it's not to jump ahead to the members pod, one of the comments is that, you know, Clare and Limerick, if they get to a league final, which it looks like on form the two undefeated teams will probably get to a league final, they're then going to be forced to play the week before they play each other in Ennis. Now, a great suggestion was that, should the first round double up? You know, again,
you've just stolen that from the members pod.
I've stolen one.
That's fine, Murph. You may answer it now. So
you're actually
even,
more,
if,
you're
even actually in that circumstance, they're due to meet in the league final. It's right before the championship is due to get underway. It seems to me perfectly sensible, as that commenter said to us, that they actually double it up as the league final.
Now, Will, you did say to us, like, Off the Ball coached us, and they said, if you can do a little segue into a next part, that segue word was so important that we can do it. Here we are. I've managed to do a segue. Yourself and Ger Gilroy and the boys can all be happy. Myself and Skettle are learning how to do this whole thing. But, yeah.
Slowly but surely now.
We're learning. 3 years. Yeah. But yeah, it's a great suggestion, and it's something I hadn't really thought about. We saw it previously with the Welsh Cup between Kilkenny and Wexford. I think it wasn't Kilkenny and Wexford had it a few years ago, or was it Galway?
Galway Wexford.
Last year, wasn't it? They had it down in Welsh Park, first round of the league. Now, some people may say the emphasis first round of the league in the Welsh Cup, right? But I do think it's a decent suggestion. It's certainly one that should be considered. What will Limerick and Clare go out with? Let's say again, and this isn't to get ahead of ourselves, that these are going to be the league final, but you'd imagine it will be. You know, it's tough for those teams to be going out 1 week and then going out to final. Which game do you put emphasis on? Do you go hammer and tongs for both games?
First round championship.
Well, you have to.
I don't care if Clare want to win the league or how much it means for Limerick to retain. The far more important game with the stakes on it is the championship game the next
week.
Oh, it is, completely.
Doesn't the relevancy of the league just dissipate when it comes to championship?
Completely.
I think it's relevant. I can see a situation whereby both sets of management teams would agree. Well, not. I don't know if that's the right word. To play two games against each other in such close proximity to each other. You know what I mean? They'd be happy to get one game. Injury risk, etc. You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's actually an ideal scenario to have one of the best league finals you're probably going to see in a long time, because both teams can go absolutely hammer and tongs at it, come away with a bit of silverware at the end of it. But, like, you at least get to consolidate all their efforts into one game as opposed to splitting it over two games where, you know, they 30% focus on the league final, but they... I can't say 100% now, with 70% or whatever you want to say. Like, they're going to put all their effort into the first round of the championship. That's obvious, you know. But the question mark then lies over, well, what can they put into a league final then, you know? Now, this
I have to ask you, well, Murph, obviously, when the Munster Championship, it's Munster Council. Income, what happens here? You know, do the league receipts, do they go to the GAA headquarters? What happens? Like, that'll come into it too, because we're talking here logically. And you'd say, right, it sounds logical, you know. Yeah. It should be done, but it mightn't be done.
No. Geez, far from it. Yeah.
I wonder what happens, Gail, to kind of switch the question up slightly, is if Tipperary win this Sunday, say if Limerick were to beat Kilkenny, Tip have got the first week off in the Munster Championship. It's like, do Tip go really hard at it and Limerick end up going with a second team because their mind would be on Clare? And that kind of degrades the league a little bit as well if that happens.
A little bit, yeah. But I can understand the position of both teams. Like, if Liam Cahill decided to go with the, call it an 80% team and have a crack at it, fair enough. Or if he decided to rest people. I think the focus, like, we're here now, just after Paddy's Day. We know the league's not even over, semi-final and final yet. But our mind is obviously gradually shifting towards the championship. So the management teams are in the same way. The league is grand. It's for most teams, they got the exercise they needed. But ultimately, I think Cahill's going to be having full focus on all management teams have full focus on the championship. So I'd say if there was more of a gap between games, you'd go full belt. You know what I mean? I just think the injury risk is huge. I can't overstate that enough, because, you know, it's such a condensed time period that if you lose one big player, it could be dramatic for the team to say one player could derail your season. But it could. if what happens now, let's say if I won't talk about Limerick, because Limerick have an embarrassment of riches at the moment to the players they have. But, like, if someone like, you know, Clare had to go to the championship without you know, John Connon, for example, that because he got injured in the league game. That's a huge gap to fill for a team like Clare. Huge, even though we're talking about the depth of their squad. So I think, yeah, look, the league is, it is what it is. It has lost a bit of its romance, I think, over the last number of years. Like, even more if you're talking about those games that we're all part of, let's say, from the last 10 or so years ago, and they were electric, you know what I mean? But the championship was far different structure-wise. It was the old knockout structure, remember, Leinster? So you had a long period of time between league and championship, so the league carried more weight, whereas I keep repeating myself week on week, it's just so close and so condensed that the league just gets shifted and into championship mode.
I do like the self-title, by the way, of that supporter who sent in the first question. I'm a Limerick supporter who's not quite gone native yet in Cork. So there you go. They want to stay anonymous, I presume, so none of their mates in Cork find out that they're texting into hurling pods. The other question, as Murph pointed out, was one that had come in from Tom Cullen, who was asking about the idea of the Munster Championship game potentially in Ennis doubling up as the league final if they're the two teams who get through. I noticed that all three of us kind of predicted that Limerick were going to be in the final one way or another. So stick that up on the Kilkenny dressing room wall that the three of us have given them no chance this Saturday in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Let's take a look then at the rest of the games that took place across the weekend. I want to just get through some of the comments first of all, because it gives a chance to reply to them from the YouTube from last week. Shane Power, who's also got his question in early for the members pod, which is a good one about transferring in players. We're going to be doing a sevens team from all three of us as well. But Shane says, can you ask Cahill on the next pod if he's building an extension currently on the house to try and create a new bedroom with a statue of the man himself, just to keep Johnny Glynn in Galway for the rest of the season?
That is a random comment. So let's just answer the question. Firstly, no. Although if my wife had her way, she'd put extensions on the house for other types of rooms. No, it's funny you brought up Johnny Glynn, because we were just talking about this morning, like, and you know, the news that he's back has created a certain, I suppose, energy around Galway again. You know, that it's good, it's great to have him back. It's like, you know, getting someone of his stature, obviously, his size, his experience, you know, it's a huge boost to a team, whereby we've probably been, over the last couple of years, let's say, we've struggled in some physicality departments in second half since Limerick. So he'd be a nice guy to bring in and land him in the edge of the square, there in the square.
Well, if you want more good news from our scout here, Mike L has said, tell Skell Johnny Glynn scored 3-2 against Patrickswell when he was playing with our Rattan recently in one half of hurling in a challenge game.
I'd believe it, yeah. I didn't know that now. That's good statistics there. Thank you for that. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's what our Drahan did. Our Drahan pumped him. Like, an awful lot of club teams nowadays, like, are trying to emulate the county game and play short ball, work through the lines, etc. But our Drahan, I like their style. Look, Derek Fahey's in goals. Johnny Glynn was full forward. A to B. It's the quickest, yeah. Everyone spread out. So yeah, I can see how he got 3-2.
A word of caution, though, from Alan Fitt 77 on YouTube. Not sure about this Johnny Glynn comeback. Mike Casey must be one of the smaller fullbacks, and yet Glynn didn't win a single ball against him when they marked each other in 2018 in the All-Ireland final. He was much younger and had more hurling in him back then. Is this a masterstroke, or is it a sign of desperation, Paul Murphy?
Ooh, desperation. Oh.
Ah, yeah, no, yeah, that's a bit heavy. No, like, I mean, it's a case of that. It's not desperation anyway. I think Henry Shefflin's looking at it, going, well, I can inject a bit of experience in. I'm certainly looking for, you know, that added edge. That could be a bit of physicality. It could be a case of an experienced player who, you know, has played in All-Ireland finals, etc. So, no, it's not an act of desperation. Like, Galway are ticking over nicely at the moment. We saw a lot of physicality out of them at the weekend. We saw the likes of Jason Flynn coming back into a bit of form as well. You know, a few lads coming back from injury as well. So I don't think, you know, Galway aren't in a place where they're going, God, we need a Hail Mary of a player coming back to salvage us. It's a kind of a case of, it's a welcome addition that Henry's going, geez, absolutely. You know, if a player of Johnny Glynn wants to come back in, there's certainly some space for him in the dressing room, albeit he has to compete for his position.
Mm-hmm. River Power with a bit of praise for Paul Murphy from last week as well. Paul Murphy was excellent on the referee issues he was talking about. Insightful, balanced and fair. Well, there you go. The compliments are rare enough. May as well tell them while you have them. The other bits and pieces, I know there's definitely one here on Limerick and Galway, so we can get onto it now in a second. But Sean was saying on YouTube as well, I know you were speaking about officiating last week, but the ref in Limerick Galway deserves a mention as well. There was a dirty stroke on Lynch, the elbow on O'Connor, a hatchet on O'Casey. Hard to understand that there were two yellows, not two reds. He's also saying that he's fine with the O'Neill red card moments earlier, but he said Mike Casey had his helmet ripped just before that as well. So I don't know. Skell, to give you a first shout, because we all saw this on the telly at the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, are any of us disagreeing with the red card?
No.
Oh, it's very hard to agree with that, to be honest, though. That was a blatant pull of the helmet.
Yeah.
You know, borderline headlock job. I think now, first of all, the officials did well to catch it. And I think he took the appropriate action. But I know there's a couple of instances that you mentioned there from one of the viewers or listeners, but I agree, there probably should have been another red, to be fair. Like, I think David Burke and Conklin are very lucky that he got away with that strike. But I didn't think the ref did a bad job, lads. Like, in fairness, I thought he did okay in that game. I know there's probably, we'll talk here, and there's probably an instant or two that has missed, but we've the benefit of replays. We always say this, guys. I thought he did okay. I can't argue too much. Like, I thought it was a balanced enough game. He gave frees and they're supposed to be frees. You know, he wasn't over technical. So he didn't let the game boil out of control. So I think kudos to him. I know we give referees hard times at times, but it's good to give praise to him as due.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And I would hope that we're reasonably balanced on this pod as well, because one thing I saw last week were a few kind of baffling decisions after we had recorded. So someone sent me on a couple in the Carlo Down game. And sometimes it does leave you scratching your head. Like in that game, in the end, Down qualified for the semi-final, so it's probably not going to matter. But in the Carlo game, their fullback was sent off for a pull-down that was never a pull-down when you look at the replay of it. So that was a huge like double jeopardy moment where there's a penalty given and a black card when he didn't touch him. And the other one was when the Down centre half back went through at one point. Definitely did not overcarry, struck the ball over the bar, and the referee had pulled him back for overcarrying. And obviously that's 1-1 of a difference within the game. So you're kind of disappointed when you see maybe those inconsistencies or bad calls like that. And I think it's fair enough for us to say, look, that's below the standard that we'd be hoping to see. But at the same time, I hope anyway, Murph, and you were called balanced in your comments last week, that we wouldn't go in too hard on them. Like, I don't think we're here trying to be too hard on refs.
No, that's it. Like, I mean, look, refs, I think, I know people say, look, maybe they fall into a different category than the players, but like we come on every week saying the player might have had a bad game and the player had a good game. Like, referees, you know, also fall to that category for me, and that, you know, referees are going to have a bad game. They're going to have good games as well. And they don't intentionally go out to have bad games, but it happens. And like, I mean, they're open to criticism as well, but as long as the criticism is fair and it's not targeted against anyone. I actually had it down as well, to be fair. I know some people might go mad as well, but I had it down to Thomas Walsh. Actually had a good game against Galway and Limerick, albeit that I'd agree with Skettle there. There probably should have been more red cards, but when you take each of them as an isolated incident, like he probably needed the shoulder. Who was the shoulder on again? When Galway man hit
it. Adrian Toohey.
Was that who it was?
Adrian Toohey went in on the young cornerback from Limerick. His name escapes me.
O'Connor. So it's Fergal O'Connor. Like, I think Thomas Walsh kind of needed his linesman there to maybe give him a steer, because that one was a bit more of, you know, two, he had a chance to line him up there. Whereas oftentimes we see other tackles where a player comes out of, let's say, like a ruck, and he gets hit in the head with a shoulder, but the player who gave the shoulder didn't have time to adjust his body position. There was a chance for Toohey, kind of, you know, he went in high enough. If that was a red card, I don't think there could have been any arguments. And again, Dahi Burke, I would say, you know, he was lucky there that he didn't get more than it. The thing I'd say about that is that it was a fleeting moment where we saw the slowdown of it. Again, Thomas Welch is coming from where maybe Dahi Burke is actually, or Davy Burke, sorry.
Davy Burke, yeah.
Davy Burke is... has his back to the referee. Maybe Thomas Walsh doesn't see it. And that's the thing that I'd give slack to the referee on, is that, you know, that was a very physical game. And there was swipes. The other thing I will say is that I think there was actually the pull just before the helmet got pulled off. There, Keane Lynch did get a fair hard pull on him at that stage as well, which I didn't see where it came from, but I saw Hurl pulling fairly hard across his legs. So there was, I understand where Limerick fans particularly more Limerick fans, would feel aggrieved. But oftentimes when I think when people are at the games, there was a few calls that I heard the Limerick crowd kind of getting on the back of the referee, but I actually thought they were correct. And there were small ones like flicks here and there. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when the emotion, and you hear the crowd getting into it, oftentimes supporters remember the emotion as opposed to remembering the actual tackle or how it was. If the crowd rises up and you hear the noise, that's what you leave the ground remembering, going this call and that call. Now, there was another one in fairness. Like if you're really be sticky about it, Seamus Flanagan got a good flick. Some Galway player, I can't remember who it was, came out with the ball. Seamus Flanagan got a flick and he flicked the ball away, but he followed through and hit the helmet. That, for me, should have played on. Seamus Flanagan didn't actually, you know, injure the player there. He hit him in the head, yes, but that wasn't his intent. So I can understand where Limerick fans would feel aggrieved, but I would snap back and look at the context of it, saying that Thomas Walsh had a very physical, tough game in very tough conditions. Yeah. He got a few calls right and he got a few wrong, but I think we'll all agree that over the course of any 70 minutes of hurling, there's going to be calls that are wrong and there's going to be, obviously, you'd hope more right. But I think, as we said last week, until referees are assisted a little bit more, you have to accept that you're going to get a few wrong calls, and that's just nature.
But even did, do you remember the two he won at the shoulder?
Yeah,
I fully believed in real time that that was a good hit.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So exactly. this is the point we're trying to make, is that like there's our sets of eyes watch this in real time, go, that's a good hit, but then when you slow it down, you know, it's a bad hit.
Yeah.
So like that's why I fully agree with you, Murph. The support has to be there for the referee, whether it be umpires, lines, etc. Because that's a very, very hard call to make, you know, to viewpoint. And look, we're looking at it from a vantage point zoomed in, whereas
yeah,
he could, you know, there could be bodies in the way, etc. So yeah, look, but again, to repeat, he had a good game. Can't say much.
Yeah. Follow-up question from Robert, which is very similar to this. Hi, Will. Was at Salt Hill at the weekend. Just before Hegarty came on, there was a fellow beside me in the stand who said, watch now, he'll be pulled for something straight away. Sure enough, he was almost instantly called for a foul, which I thought was incredibly soft. So my question comes in two parts. Do the lads think the referees have certain players targeted for fouls before a game? And if so, was there anyone in their Galway or Kilkenny teams that they knew could be targeted before a game got underway?
I wouldn't say from a Galway perspective, no one comes to memory straight away that you know, they carried, what's the word I could use, a reputation, I suppose, that they were going to be on the line in terms of aggression wise.
Would you agree, before you get into it, that Hegarty does seem to carry that with referees sometimes?
I think now it is in the last, probably in the last year, it has switched. I think it's switched a bit. I think, remember, he got sent off in Innes when he struck, who did he strike? I can't remember who he struck, but he got put off. It's like from that point on, it just seems to have, you know, followed him a bit. And like, I like the way he plays. Like, you know, as Dirk Nann used to say about John Gardner, like, you hate him, but you love to have him. You know what I mean? And that's the same way with Hegarty. I think a lot of the Limerick teams, every team does it. Every successful team plays on the line a bit. But from a Galway perspective, in my time, I don't remember anyone that way. I do think, I'm going back here, I do think bigger lads get fouled an awful lot more. You know, wraparounds. I do think Johnny Glynn gets fouled. I know I'm saying his name again, but in our time, he used to get like wrestled. And because he's so large, you know what I mean, refs wouldn't give the freeze, etc. So, but no, we had no bad boys. We weren't like the Kilkenny lads.
No walking yellow cards then, Skell. Someone who you expected would get a booking from a referee.
I would, if someone was running through on goal, I'd expect Dahi Burke, yeah. He was going to go and dish it out a bit, yeah. But that was primarily his job as well as a fullback, you know. But I don't think that I think as we sit here today, no one is ever going to say that Dahi Burke is a dirty hurler. He's a physical hurler, you know. But I was nearly certain he could get a yellow. But after that, no, there was no strokes. It's a good question, and it gets the brain thinking a bit. Mm-hmm. And even I'm going over to your side as well, Murph. I can't think of anyone in the Kilkenny teams. You know, did Tommy get a bit of it for a while?
I don't think so. I think what may have happened at different times would have been if there was a topic in the media. Like, I remember, and I wasn't part of these teams, I remember around 2006, 7, 8 or whatever, I think like Gerlach Nann and things would have said that Kilkenny players were playing the hands, that were slapping his hands.
He was manager of Rus that time.
Trying to draw attention. Yeah, exactly. So like trying to draw attention to things, and maybe other things would have popped up then, like there would have been talk of Owen Larkin might have, we talk of this extra arm that he'd be well able to grab the arm when he's going through and draw a foul. We did, I would have noticed a few times where referees would have honed in on that, and when actually a player may have went in hard on him, they would have left it off because they would have thought that, well, they're trying to, I suppose, mitigate against what the general talk is at the moment of, you know, maybe Kilkenny getting freeze here or there. So I wouldn't have noticed any player though in particular, you know, before they went out. But I would have noticed, like, something the referees would do is that if there's a big player on the field and there is a big personality, if any of those players dissent on a referee, the referee will usually, you know, not to say make an example of them, but lay down their authority by making sure that player doesn't get to dictate to them, which is fair enough in one way. But, you know, it can lead to a bit of tension on the field between players and between referees if it's not communicated properly either. So, but no, I wouldn't say I ever felt that there was a target on any of our players before they went out that they were almost automatically on a yellow card, you know. Tommy used to get away because he just used to play it off like that he was innocent in the matter, that he didn't know what was going on.
I'd say Tommy had a bit of charm with the referees, Murph, which probably helped.
He did. Like, I mean, sure, when you think back at Brian Gavin, like in 2011, when he struck him on the nose, like, if you look at Tommy's face there, it automatically changes. Like, he's full of aggression pushing at the Tipperary lads. And, you know, a loose hurl accidentally hit Brian Gavin on the nose. But you see Tommy's whole demeanour change as soon as he goes after striking the referee. And you just see him straight away. He becomes very passive. The face is blank. And then he baby faces on straight away. He's thinking, right, if I have any hope here now, Brian Gavin looks at me and he's looking innocent. So he had a good way about him.
Is there any other hurler nationally, now that you asked the question, we're giving examples of Cathal Kilkenny that you think has that kind of, I hate to use the word reputation, but do you know what I mean?
What, the granny yellow card before they go out, like, or?
Well, yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
That they can be over physical or over, you know, complimentary of the hurl. I can't think of anyone, to be honest.
No, it's monitored so much in the game at the moment. I don't think players have this ability to be putting in a dig here, there, putting in a sly. You know, you're caught straight away. Like, if anything, managers, I think, are advising lads not to get sent off stupidly. But if you go back 20 years ago, I think there was a bit more scope there for players to be to have a bit more of a dig off the ball, or to, you know, like, I mean, there just wasn't the coverage at the time. There wasn't as many cameras. It's certainly not in the big games anyway. So I think, you know, if there was...
It's probably far more apparent in club games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. In club games, yeah, absolutely.
Johnny Maher comes to mind.
Jesus Christ, yeah. That was... Sure, Jesus Christ. That was carnage.
That's an applicable word, I have to say, carnage, yeah. Like, he was cutting thistles with a hurl.
Right, so the games we had the weekend, bear in mind, we had only the one game on the TV, so we're relying on reports and what we saw on League Sunday for some of these fixtures. But the game that we did get to see, 17 points apiece between Galway and Limerick. We've already mentioned that Limerick hurled a lot of that game a man down after Shane O'Brien got that straight red card for the pull of the helmet. Mm-hmm. But I suppose Limerick will be obviously happy enough. They got through unbeaten. They fought back in the game. They didn't quite win it, but in the end, Dermot Burns with 5 frees after he came off, Adam English scored 5 points in play. Hannon got back onto the field. You've got Sean Finn now coming back to the fore as well, Murph. Like, overall, this has probably been a regular section of the league and a performance on Saturday that overall John Kiely would probably be happy enough with. He's got to see plenty of hurlers as well.
He will, and I think he'll be happy with the likes of, I mean, Fergal O'Connor, I suppose we haven't mentioned him yet. He had a great game of cornerback, and you know, I think a lot of people will be looking, talking about how many players they have to play in the full back line or half back line, but nevertheless, they still have players still putting the hand up. And I think he's put himself out there as that, well, if John Kiely needs to call on someone, that he has a really tenacious corner back there who just does his job really well, plays from the front. You know, it's really, really refreshing to see. It comes out with ball, but always looks to have a good option or use a good option when he has the ball in hand. I think we're really happy with Adam English as well. Like, when you consider Seamus Flanagan and Aaron Gillan weren't, you know, Gillan was marshalled really well at the start of the game. But when those boys maybe weren't getting traction in the forward line, Adam English pops up with 5 points, which is huge, you know. So, and I think that is something where we've seen that there is scope around that full forward position for Limerick, where that has been a movable option, where that, you know, John Kiely does adapt that position depending on what he needs on the field. And if he's looking to go, right, well, I have Gillan is going to start, you know, you'd imagine Peter Casey is going to start as well. Seamus Flanagan, you know, we've seen on and off sometimes where he doesn't get traction in a game. John Kiely can use that as a position where he puts in someone else. Adam English, I think, has put himself up there as well. We haven't even mentioned Donico Dalig, who had a really good league as well. So I think all in all, coming through to this stage, John Kiely would be really happy. I think David Reedy as well, he was actually really good as well. Another player playing midfield, I thought, actually did really well as well. So, I mean, absolutely, there's no reason in Limerick to be disappointed or to be picking out anything at all. Sean Finn coming back, injuries are fairly minimal. It's a perfect position for Limerick.
Skell, if I could ask you about Colm O'Neill, he switches over a little bit here with Hannon coming back in at 6, and we had a couple of weeks of discussion about how he was getting on at 6 in his first 2 games there. I'm wondering, is the half-back line the plan for him here?
I think he's a bit like what Liam Cahill said about Seamus Kennedy, like putting out fires. I'm not going to say putting out fires, that sounds a bit drastic, but like he certainly has the talents to play everywhere. You know, bar the full back line, obviously, I think he can play anywhere from 5 to 15. And like we've come to know him predominantly in the half forward line, particularly 11, even in Keane Lynch's absence, but he seems that he can operate everywhere. And like, it's like the principle of the Limerick team at the moment. They can all play universally. They can all play in each other's positions, and it's the kind of game model they have, that you can envisage Jeremy Burns in the forwards, you can put Keane Lynch in the back. So they're all playing an excellent ball to hand, running and through the lines.
They love converting a forward into a defender under John Kiely as well.
Yes, that has been done, and it's done very successfully, as we've all seen. But it's like, it's just one more for you were talking about, not to shift away from Conor Neal, but O'Connor. Like, it's going to be hard for him, you know, he's had a good league, in fairness to the kid, like, but he's not going to be on the team. Do you know what I mean? That's probably a hard pill to swallow for them. Like, you know, and the question is where is Cotton going to be needed? Like, so if Kyle Hayes returns, you know, you'd imagine he's going to go into the halfback line. You've got Dan Morrissey to come back. Like, as I said, they have an embarrassment of riches. Like, we'd probably see Kyle Hayes up in the forwards. You know what I mean? And it's amazing to me to think that you could have someone like a Seamus Flanagan not playing. Do you know what I mean? Like, who would get on every other team in the country, but potentially, I'm just using him as an example. And I think O'Neill, I don't think he features in the full forward line. I think he features probably 10 to 12. I think that's what he'll revert to type come championship time. But like, he's had a good league as well. Like, he's for him to get kind of molded into a half back line player over the last couple of weeks, probably played most of his life in the forwards. Like, he's done very well against top class inter-county forwards. So like, he can be, if you're John Kiley, as Murphy's saying, looking at your group, you're saying like, we've got a solid group. They've got a solid 25 as well. It's actually worrying, but here we are.
Gosh. I have two questions for you on Galway, Skell. The first one would be, they probably won't be too unhappy with this. So Conor Whelan, Dahi Burke both lost the appeals against their red cards. So without two major players here, played pretty well, got back, salvaged the draw at the end. Okay, it wasn't enough to reach the semi-finals. But Galway are going off in a training camp now, and they'll probably be happy enough to do that pre the Leinster Championship. I doubt it really matters that much not to have gone through to a league semi-final next weekend.
No, I don't think so. I think I agree with you. I think, like, coming away from the game, I was actually disappointed. I thought we could have won it, you know, particularly in the second half. We did an awful amount of shots. Like, in someone like Tom Monaghan, who's been excellent for Galway the last couple of years, just the shooting boots just evaded him the other day. Like, he had four or five shots that just, it seems that they'd go wide on the left and then he'd overcompensate and go wide on the right. But another day that'll pop over from. But I think ultimately, when you look at our league as a whole, you know, we've I'll say steadily improved, and I was pleasantly surprised, if I'm honest, with the performance that we put up against Limerick. The first thing I wanted to see anyway was physicality. Could we match them and even see them in times? And the answer for that was yes. I was hoping the game wouldn't be ruined by conditions, because, as you know yourself, in league games in Pearse Stadium, there can be a game of two halves depending on who has the breeze. So it was really good from Galway's perspective that it was competitive. Yes, a lot of frees to give away. Jimmy Burns getting five, obviously. That's he's done what he scored last year in the Ireland final. He's got 7 frees, 8 points in the Ireland final. So, like, that's well within his remit. But I think coming away, I'm happy to see Gavin Lee is making a bit of a stride forward. Ronan Glynn, I'm hoping, is going to nail down a team spot. Brian Cannon got back. Cahill Mannion got back. So it's like the group is beginning to come together now. And I think the training camp is probably coming at the right time. I don't think Henry and the management team would be disappointed if they knocked out of the league. I think they'll actually be happy enough that they get to go away now and work as a group together. I'd say a weeks-long training camp is worth a month's training sessions, if you know what I mean. That collective time together to go through all different facets of game plans, etc. So I'm happy enough. I won't lie to you, I'm happy enough. I know here I am, we're knocked out, but I'm still happy enough, and I'm looking at the Leinster Championship thinking this is one we have to win.
Well, look, getting to Division 1A was the most important thing, whatever about getting to a semi-final, and Galway had that achieved. So the other question was about Cahill Mannion, because I know you're a big fan. He came in, struck over 4 good points. He looks like he's back. He looks like he's sharp ahead of championship as well. And good to get some game time into him in the weekend.
Super. And like, Cahill is, we're just talking about Cahill O'Neill, but Cahill Mannion is very similar. Like, he can play in a number of positions, and like, his pace is electric. So like, he's a supreme athlete. So that's why we always see him in the kind of the midfield. Even sometimes in the sweeper role, we saw him against Tipperary in the championship last year. But like, he's an excellent, excellent player. And, you know, every team looks at certain players and they say, right, if we're going to be successful, we have to have this guy, you know, at the top of his game. And for me, I think if Galway are going to be successful, they have to have Cahill Mannion playing, operating in the way he did there on Saturday. Like, 4 points from him is a good return. Like, he's capable of that every day. So we've seen it before. He can shoot the lights out. You know, he can do 5 or 6 points in play some days and then kind of go quiet. So the question is, where do you put him to get the most out of him? And it looks like they're probably going to persist him in the full forward line, because, again, he's a shooter, lads. He can shoot from everywhere. And it's great to have that kind of athleticism. You look at the way Peter Casey and Gillan play for Limerick and Flanagan. You know, athleticism, the corners, pace, fitness, and shooting from all angles. That's what Cahill Mannion is also. So good to have him back. Great that his brother played really well as well, Porrick. So, I think we have a nice squad. Yeah, like, I don't think we have the best squad in the country. I think that's obviously for Limerick. I probably think we're definitely in the top 3 or 4 anyway, I think, from squad depth in terms of talent we have. So it's just going to piece it together and do it right today.
A couple of other counties I want to touch on just before we finish up on the main pod for this week, Murph. And one that is Cork, and they finished the league strongly now. They had a couple of close games which didn't go their way against Clare and Kilkenny, but then they wiped out the rest of their fixtures. They're putting up big scores. Alan Connolly scored 6 goals over the course of 6 days there in 2 games. So are Cork looking the real deal now at this stage?
Yeah, their stock is definitely rising. We saw from last year, they were a great team to watch. They had a lot of threats all over the field, and they were getting their defensive situation together as well. This year now, they seem to be headed in the right direction. I think all teams, depending on whatever way their results break down, what all teams want to do is kind of finish heading in the right direction towards the end of the league. And that's something Cork have definitely done. Like last weekend when we were trying to predict between them and Wexford, and Wexford unbeaten as well at that time, we were kind of saying this could be fairly even. Now I just about tipped Cork, but Cork completely blew Wexford out of it, and in Wexford Park as well, which is a good achievement in tough conditions. So look, Cork are definitely headed in the right direction. Alan Connolly, getting so many goals like that over the last 2 weeks, with the likes of Declan Dalton coming back. And in general, they've been fairly balanced in terms of their attacking threat, like 12 scores over the weekend as well. In a bad weekend, I know we keep harping back to it, but a bad weekend in terms of conditions, like that's brilliant. Kieran Joyce getting the first point after 15 seconds from centre back, a lad who could always pop up with a score. So I think they'll be really happy. And not too many people talking about them still, which is, again, a place where they'll be happy. Finishing up the rounds of the league, that their stock is rising. They've done a lot really well. Yes, they haven't been perfect, so they have things to improve on. But heading into a Munster Championship, they look really fresh. They look like they know what they're about, and they're hurling with a lot of confidence. So I think that makes a very potent mixture for Cork for the Munster Championship. And as neutrals, I think it's a great place to have a Cork team coming into a Munster Championship.
Yeah. The other one is Waterford, Skell, and this feels a bit like Groundhog Day, but obviously another defeat. And again, in a situation in the second half where they needed scores and they were chasing the game, and Kilkenny kept them at arm's length, and they scored just 4 points in the second half. Now, you have to look at the record here that Davy Fitzgerald has over the 10 games for the last 2 years. He's won 3 league games. They've beaten Laois, Offaly and Antrim and lost to everyone else. They'll play in what's effectively Division 2 next year in Division 1B. They won 1 out of 4 championship games last year. And I know when Davey was talking to Park Lodge last week, he was saying that they've basically got 5 weeks now to get ready for their first game against Cork. And that's time to maybe fix a few things along the way. But I don't know, is there any indication that things are going to be fixed in time for that first game at Welsh Park?
Evidence, the evidence isn't there. Well, the evidence would prove that they're going to struggle in Munster, to be honest. We already know it's a hotly contested championship, and all teams in Munster at the minute, bar Waterford, are playing relatively well. So that's a tough proposition. But I if I was in the Waterford dressing right now, I'd struggle to find confidence, if you know what I mean. I'd struggle to find the belief that we're going to actually contest the Munster championship, try and win the championship, etc. Because the evidence is not there. And I think, I know we've had our fair share of talking points about Davey and his management team over the last number of years, but he's under pressure. He's under serious pressure in Waterford at the minute. And I don't think there's any, positivities around them at the moment. It's hard to see how the public in Waterford would grasp onto any kind of positivity, because the results just aren't there. 10 scores against Kilkenny, that's a better term at home. When you consider, that it's how do I put this? New stadium, new pitch, getting back home, win your home games.
The 2 goals have given them a decent platform early enough in the game as well.
Winning at half-time, they're up a couple of points at half-time, but then it's just kind of really, it fell asunder, really, let's be honest. But I was going to catch you on the hop there more from a minute ago when you were talking about Cork. I was going to get you to name the 3 that's going to come out of Munster, just to put you on the spot.
Here we go.
And I think, to be honest, when we talk about the 3, we're really, for me now, I hope I'm not trying to be too negative here, but I'm picking 3 out of 4. I'm not picking 3 out of 5. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I just cannot see a situation whereby Waterford, and now here we are talking about the league, but turn it around a bit. You know what I mean? Turn this thing around and get the show back on the road. I just can't see it, because I'm an evidence-based man, and I just can't see the evidence being produced yet. I was hoping they'd go back systematically, just abort all the systems, go 15 on 15, utilise the good players that you have in their best positions and have at it. But that, it seems to be a continuation of same, if you like. So Murph, I'll throw the ball over to you there, right? I'm going to get you to call the three Munster teams first.
Out of nowhere, you just run this at me.
Just to put you on the spot.
This, by the way, will be quoted multiple times by fans from Cork, Clare, Limerick, and Tipperary, and even some Waterford fans, possibly, if you write them off entirely. So, no pressure whatsoever.
Yeah, like, the only place I'm looking at the moment is between Cork and Tip. That's what I'm looking at the moment. So I'm saying that Limerick and Clare are going to go through, and then between Cork and Tip, then who is going to? And I did, like, if you look at last year, Cork didn't get through. Really good team, you know, just didn't get enough of those wins. Had really good performances, got draws and different things. Just didn't get enough on the. And I think that's what could happen between Cork and Tip. Now, if you look at, I suppose, if you were to look at Tipperary at the moment, you know, losing Seamus Kennedy there through the injury, automatically you're seeing, right, if there's a very small things, I think, you know, a grain of sand is going to tip this in favour of one or the other. I would just about go with Cork at the moment on the back of they haven't shipped as many injuries as Tipperary at the moment. If you look at the likes of Seamus Callanan stepping away this year again, another potent forward, like Patrick Horgan is still there with Cork and still being very effective, but they can use him in a very, I suppose, a different kind of role because there's so many forwards that are coming through. The likes of Declan Dalton even as well there, if Patrick Horgan isn't going well, Declan Dalton is flying with the freeze. Yeah. I would just about tip it in favour of Cork there. And those are very fine margins. And even as a Kilkenny man, it pains me to say that you wouldn't have a championship for a Tip actually progress out of it. But I just think that where Clare are unbeaten at the moment, they had a poor league last year, but still had a really good championship. Granted, they would have wanted to win more. Clare, I think, are coming into this in a really good position. Limerick or Limerick. Waterford, I'd agree with you. I don't think they're going to fashion anything really into the Munster Championship. So for me, it just comes down to the two of them, Tipperary and Cork. And if you're to go with it, I think Cork are headed in the right direction with a slightly bigger panel. That's my marginal one. So I'll say Cork, Clare and Limerick at the moment.
I'm the same three, and I've picked Cork the last 3 years, so don't let me down this time around, Cork. You can get out of it. Skell, very quickly there, who are you picking as your three?
I'm the same three. So please,
we've put the kiss of death on at least one of the three, by the way.
But one thing I will say is, like, and I said already, like, it would be a pity not to have this Tipperary team in it because, you know, the likes of Garrod, O'Connor and these lads not being in the championship for the rest of the way. But that is the good position with Munster is that, you know, in order for it to be absolutely cutthroat, a good team has to miss out, you know. And unfortunately for me, as far as I can see, it's going to be Tip or Cork. And I just think at the moment it's going to be Tip.
Similar. Mm. But I wouldn't be one bit surprised if Tipperary comes.
But the first two weeks are going to decide an awful lot. Like, Clare are playing Limerick first at home. And then Limerick have Tip, haven't they? The week after, isn't it?
Skell, you're throwing a lot of questions at us that you were posing the actually.
Yeah. You're also, by the way, this is a conversation we should be having in 2 weeks' time. When we have the down week, and it's like, are lads going to talk about this week? Well, I mean, we can definitely knock 20 minutes out of who's going to go with the Munster Championship. So,
I know, we've done it already.
Tell you what, I'll pause my call for the Munster Championship. Come back to me in 2 weeks.
Do, exactly. Yeah. Right. So, as we finish up on our Monday pod for this week, the Division 1A for next year is Clare, Kilkenny, Cork, Wexford, Limerick, Tip and Galway. 7 teams in both the top flights next season. And 1B is going to be Waterford, Offaly, Dublin, Westmeath, Antrim, Carlow, who are already in the 2A final, and the winners of this Saturday's match between Laois and Down. So both the finalists in 2A will come up into the new division for next year. A reminder, those semi-finals this weekend, on Saturday you've got Limerick against Kilkenny at Páirc Uí Chaoimh, that's a 4:30 throw-in, and 4 o'clock on Sunday, O'Moore Park in Port Laois is Clare against Tipperary. Division 2 semi-final will be Laois against Down. Laois qualifying at the weekend in 2A, defeating Kerry. Really, really disappointing campaign for Kerry going into the Joe McDonagh. I think they've got a lot to do now at this stage to turn their year around, but Laois winning 4:20 to 1:19. Ross King with 1-7 on his 100 league appearance for Laois, so a great achievement for him. Fiona McKessie scored the Kerry goal very late on, it carried all the way to the net. Mossy Keys scored 2 goals for Laois as well. Down doing the job to qualify against Meath on Saturday afternoon. They knew what they had to do because Kildare had beaten Carlow on the Friday night 116 to 15 points. That meant that there was a 5-point differential, so Down had to win by 5 points or more to qualify, and Dahi Sands scored a hat-trick for Down. They lost to Laois in Port Laois back in the first round by 218 to 17 points, but Laois did get a late goal, so that game is going to be hard to call this Saturday to see who goes through to play against Carlow in the league final. So that is our lot for the first pod of this week. If you've been joining us on News Talk, I want to give credit to both the guys. The swear jar, the Tenery Fund, is in very rag order after this podcast. There was not one single swear, Skell. That was impressive.
it's a sign of growth, Will, isn't it?
It really is. You can swear away like a trooper on the members' pod if you want. No, but thankfully, no, the radio listeners.
I'll keep going the way I'm going now.
Yeah, didn't have to hear any F-bombs whatsoever, which is great. It makes the edit very easy for the radio team. So thank you for that. If you have been listening to the Hurling Pod, a reminder that the members' pod will be out later this Monday as well. For your ears, you're getting it a little bit early this week because we're going to get probably a refresh on our cordial, come back and do that pod now in a few minutes' time. We're going to be picking a sevens team, which is partly inspired by the football pod doing so in their great interview, which you should check out with the Clifford brothers from Killarney last week, where they picked a football sevens team. Then our friends over in the Premier Pod sent their hurling sevens team, so that inspired us to put one together. So on the members pod, we're going to talk about that. We've also got a question about what three current players you would take for your county team to make them better. I was not allowed to take the entire Limerick team for Offaly, unfortunately. It is restricted to just three players, so we'll be discussing that on the members pod and also digging down into the two semi-finals this coming weekend. It has been the Hurling Pod with thanks to Borgosh Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Championship. For now, Paul Murphy, James Skell, thanks a million.
See you, lads.
Thanks for it.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.